Hello and welcome to Every Woman. I'm Fiona and behind the board today is my wife Una.
Hello out there.
So how was your day today, Una wife?
Well, I almost didn't make it to engineer today on KKFI because I pulled out of the driveway. My car started rather slow and I thought, I'd better test it to make sure it'll start again. And of course, I shut it off and it didn't start again, which was kind of stupid. But my homegirl, Safira, I called her up and I said, "Yo, homegirl, can you go out and take me to AutoZone to get a battery?" And she said, "I don't know. You know, I just want to kind of lay around naked all day or whatever." But I convinced her to come out.
And to put clothes on, hopefully.
Yeah, you have to have that at AutoZone or else they just give you that look, you know. But yeah, we got battery in place up here just in time. That's how we do things at KKFI.
Just in time?
Everything by the seat of our pants or skirt, as the case may be.
So, flying by the seat of our pants or skirts, we have two good guests today for you. We're going to start off the day by talking to Elise Crittle of D&D Elise, the Red Knight's Inn, and she's also a contributing author to Uncaged, a publication by the DMs Guild, and we'll be talking about the importance of diversity and women in gaming. And then after we've spoken to her, we'll be talking to Dr. Carmen Shea, who is the Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion for the National Women's Political Caucus, about their upcoming convention in St. Louis. And in the interest of full disclaimers, I need to point out that my wife is actually going to be speaking on their diversity panel.
Yes, there's going to be a lunchtime panel session that I'm going to speak about the intersectionality of LGBTQIA people and feminism. I rather like lunch panels. I speak at a lot of them in my day job as I'm out in the industry doing tech papers, and a lot of people say, "Well, you don't get to eat or whatever," but you know, that's not so bad because you have a captive audience right there. Because sometimes you give a presentation and there's like three people in the audience out of a auditorium of 200, but here they have to listen to you because otherwise they don't get food. So,
and I think I can hear Elise laughing on the phone. So, Elise, welcome to Every Woman.
Oh, hi. Sorry.
No, you're welcome to laugh.
Now, this is community radio, so this is how we roll.
Yes. And it's not like we've got a pre-canned studio laugh ready to go if Una says something funny.
Hey, you said you wouldn't tell anyone about that.
So I'm delighted to get to speak to you. We've only been able to communicate by Facebook Messenger before. Mm-hmm. And I know that in every single Saturday in the month of June you were busy because you were streaming and doing your own podcast for Women's Gaming Month. So could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I created the Red Knight Inn because it's really important to me to have diversity at the gaming table. So the previous years we'd done some online events, so I was like, okay, I want to start my own. And so not only did I celebrate Women in Gaming, but I also celebrated Pride Month. So I had folks from Women in Gaming and LGBTQIA community play TTRPG games, such as Dungeons & Dragons. We also had panels to talk about diversity in gaming and the importance of celebrating Pride and Women in Gaming Month, just to improve, you know, the gaming experience, whether it's at your local gaming store or online, for both those groups in the community. And I also ended up doing a live Women in Gaming Month event at my local comic book store as well, just to try something new this year.
That sounds like a whole awesome series of events. And I'm also a big fan of local comic book stores, and I'm a big proponent of the free comic book day every year.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're also an underrepresented community that a lot of women feel that, or get told when they're younger, that the comics aren't for them, or they should grow up, and those are for kids.
Now, the problem of women in gaming, and I mean the problem of the barriers against women in gaming, that has been around since I started playing, you know, Dungeons & Dragons first edition back in the 1970s and beforehand. It was pretty well known that, you know, women were even at the gaming table, we were just considered to be eye candy to some respect, or we were someone's little sister that, oh yeah, we've got to include them in here, and everyone really doesn't want them to be there.
And I myself wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons and didn't know any local groups that did it. And I went to a girls' school, and there was a boys' school that it was paired with. And I found out on the day I was leaving that the boys' school had had a D&D group at lunchtimes that I could have gone to. And I was like, why did you tell me this now when it's too late for me to join? It hadn't occurred to any of them that any of the girls might be interested.
Yeah, and I think, like, I've heard of it. So I'm very active in the online D&D community, and I've heard a lot of different stories. Women talk about going to all-male tables, and, you know, the game starts out talking about sexual assault or things that make people feel really uncomfortable. So a reaction to that has been to create safety tools. So I know Kiana is really well-known for having safety tools, so that way if topics get into an uncomfortable place, like, hey, I want to play next card, so that way the DM knows to move forward. But there's still those barriers there. I know I got really lucky. Like, I grew up in Kansas City area. I used to go to Pulp Fiction Comics and Games, owned by Adam Dawson. He's always been really inclusive. All the workers are really great there about allowing women and diverse populations to come in and game. But not all game stores are like that. And some women, like, they have a bad experience at a game store and they never come back. So I think it's really important to try to create that inclusivity so women, LGBTQIA community, and others feel comfortable and represented when they do go into their local comic book store or gaming conventions. So yeah, there's definitely some barriers still there.
I think a lot of the time a lazy way to heighten suspense or drama in fiction is to have one of the female characters be raped, because then you haven't killed off any of the characters and you can still reuse them, but you've heightened suspense and said, look, this stuff is serious here. And people don't realize how triggering it is to have something that may have happened to you or that is a frequent fear and standard part of your world be used as just a point in a story just to move the plot along.
Yeah, I think that does happen, and I think something important to do if you're GMing a game of Dungeons and Dragons is during your session zero, be like, hey, you know, what are everyone's lines and veils? What are things that you guys absolutely do not want to talk about? And you can, like, tell the GM out loud in person, or you can send them a PM so no one else sees, but really sitting down and being empathetic to other people's experiences and finding out what does trigger them before you even start the game, I think, is like a really important step to kind of preventing that from happening. But not everyone's aware of the safety tools or aware of how to have, you know, add that to their session zero. So I think it's definitely stuff worth thinking about, because people do use those common tropes in their games to create excitement, and they don't realize that having rape scenes and stuff like that is really demeaning to women and might make women uncomfortable to gaming people.
I think part of it is very contingent upon the GM. The GM has to make a very strong statement and show that they are in control of the game, and they can't just let the players, you know, take it off the rails, so to speak, with their own private peccadilloes or whatever you want to call it. I remember a game that I GM'd very, very, very long time ago, where at one point, for some unknown reason, one of the players decided that they wanted to rape a non-player character. And I said, oh, come on, no, you're just not going to do that here. And they're like, okay, well, I'm going to do it anyways, because that's realism. That's what really happened. I said, yeah, well, you're out of the game. So get out of my house. This just isn't going to happen, so bye. And led to a very long feud in the local gaming community, because people really objected to the fact that I would throw someone literally out of the game for doing something like that.
Yeah, I think boundary setting is super important. Like, definitely, like, that's why I think that session zero is so important. Like, hey guys, like, here's some topics we're just not going to talk about. If, you know, we get into a topic you're uncomfortable with, play your X card or play the let's drop the curtain and move on kind of cards and your safety tools. Yeah, the GM, it's definitely their role to kind of, like, I guess be a referee of the content and be like, hey, you know, folks are uncomfortable, let's move forward. And especially if the person's really adamant about that, like, oh, I really want to do this for realism, you can definitely pull them aside and be like, okay, like, let's have a conversation. Why are you wanting to do these things in the game? Oh, you want excitement, you want this or that? Like, what are some other ways to do that that doesn't demean women or another population in the game? So I agree that the GM plays, like, a huge role in kind of, like, managing and refereeing the game.
And when you're talking about a completely fantasy environment, saying you want to do something for realism is a little bit beyond stupid, because if you wanted to do stuff for realism, it would be, oh, roll a D20, you got a 1, so now there is a wreck on the highway and you're going to be 2 hours late for work. That's realism.
It's like, yeah. Yeah. You, the half-elf sorcerer who has a dragon as a familiar, want to bring more realism into the game. Okay.
Yeah. Realism would be having to do litter training of your dragon familiar.
Realism is when the photocopier is jammed and no one knows how to unjam it.
And you can tell we both love gaming, so us riffing on realism there isn't just saying that gaming is silly.
Do you have any statistics or any general sense of is the percentage of women gamers increasing over time?
So just kind of like from what I've seen, I think women gaming has always been there. There's always been a huge group of women that game. They just stay at home. They're like, okay, I had a bad experience at a game store, so we're going to game at home with my gal pals and my other friends. But now, since there's more movement, like gaming months and Dungeons and Dragons really pushing, like, hey, we've always hired women to write these adventures since the 70s. Like, let's spotlight them. Let's hire more women. Let's get Kate Walsh in here and Kathleen Phoenix and all these awesome women in the community to help be the face. So I think there's a movement to kind of help women come out of their house and start to feel safer at the conventions, safer at the gaming store, feeling like they're able to say something at the gaming table when stuff does get uncomfortable, and having other women there with them to back them up. So I think women in gaming has always been there. It's just now we're creating a public space so they can come out and be in the world. So that's kind of like my view of it.
Did you see any lashback when Wizards of the Coast started actually spotlighting their women that were creating content of the, oh, well, I always knew that was written by a woman and I didn't like that story originally anyway? Anything like that happen?
I think when Kate Walsh got hired, there was a lot of backlash. Like, she had a ton of design experience. She had a really great background in gaming. And I hired her on, they knew she was good at what she did, and people were just like, oh, she's not qualified, oh, she's this, she's that, yet if a guy's name had been on that resume for the same qualifications that they came back, no one would have complained. So yeah, there was a huge, like, backlash for them publicly hiring a woman, but there was also a lot of people that supported her as well. There's definitely, you can definitely see the barriers, that are there for women when they're getting hired for these types of jobs. So,
and I know you yourself are involved with the DMs Guild and writing materials for them now. So can you tell me about how you got into that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've done some various online D&D projects that included interviewing people in the RPG community. I was interviewing Mike a lot, and he invited me to Undermountain Life's Chambers project. So I was like, hey, would you like to write some modules for us? So I did that, and ever since then, I've had people ask me to join projects. I've even started some of my own projects, which are going on right now. It's like a second job.
I totally understand having volunteer things and become a second job and an avocation.
You mean like what we're doing right now?
That was what I was hinting to us, yes. So I know that you actually contributed to their recent one, Uncaged.
Yeah. So the Uncaged Anthology was spearheaded by Ashley Warren. She's a Dean's Guild Adept Writer, has education in writing, extremely talented. She put out a proposal for writers being like, hey, I want to turn ahead on the common tropes regarding gender and gaming. Because a lot of times, like you brought up, women are displayed in rape scenes and stuff like that, and not very favorable light. She also wanted to turn some of the tropes around the monsters in Dungeons & Dragons. So, like, for example, the hags, the Medusa, Gorgon, and be like, you know, these monsters, they're not all ugly and terrible. Like, they have a background, they have a story, they have feelings, there's depth to them. So it got so big that there's 4 volumes coming out. The games, or the one-shots, include kind of like some hard things that women and LGBTQIA community go through. A lot of it's written by women and folks from the LGBTQIA community. So it actually is Emmy nominated right now for a gaming award, which is really exciting. So it's really great to see something out there that pushes for diversity in gaming get so big. So I feel really lucky to be a part of such a really cool project.
That does sound like an awesome project. And if anyone were interested in getting hold of a copy of this, where would they be able to find it?
So it's available in hardcover and PDF on the Dungeon Masters Guild website. I believe it's www.dmsguild.com. And if you just search, like, Uncaged in Dungeons & Dragons, you'll find all kinds of reviews and links to the DM's Guild to pick up a copy. And I know Volume 2 just came out as well, so there's 2 volumes available out of the 4.
Great.
And Volume 3, it says, will be out in July.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, 1 a month, I'm guessing.
That's a pretty aggressive schedule. It's really impressive.
Yeah, Ashley Warren really balances a lot of projects. So I think she's really set the standard in the DM's Guild in regards to advertising, group projects in general. I think she's really making a splash in the D&D community and doing really great work.
And another successful woman in D&D.
Yes.
And now all of these are based on 5th edition, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so all these are written for 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, and they can be standalone one-shots, or they're things that you can kind of slide into your adventure if you're running a campaign or a homebrew. So.
Nobody has any respect for 1st edition anymore.
Oh, still a few out there. So.
Well, you could probably down-convert it, love, if you could find anyone that would play it with you.
Yeah, nobody wants to play with me.
Aww. You're just going to have to take your dice and go home.
Oh. Yeah, I can't even find my dice. You have, like, billions of them scattered around the house. It's like treading on Legos everywhere. 20-sided Legos.
It's only the ones that roll badly that I leave scattered around on the floor to teach them to do better next time. So, having totally derailed the conversation with the mechanics of dice and how that doesn't really work with statistics, if any woman wanted to get involved in actually writing and creating content, how would you recommend that she go about it?
So I think the best way to get involved in the Dungeon Masters Guild is to kind of like find the communities online. So if you're on Twitter, hashtag DMs Guild. If you're on Facebook, there's some really great groups out there. RPD just started the Dungeon Masters Guild Creator Circle. So there, people are like, oh, I need an editor, I need a map maker. Hey, I started this project. I know I myself am starting production of the Feywild collection that I'm working on right now. That's like a community-built, multi-volume project. I'm taking submissions for Fae-themed magic items and weapons up until the 31st. So if you find me at D&D on Twitter or Facebook, you'll be able to find how to submit to that project as well. I'm big about allowing a diverse group of people help me create content. I'm really big about bringing in new writers and artists as well.
That sounds great. And I'm sure we all look forward to seeing your upcoming projects get released.
Oh, thank you.
Can you Tell me a little bit more about the Red Knights Inn.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Red Knights Inn is my Twitch channel. It's really small right now. I just launched it in alignment with Women in Gaming Month and Pride. I created it because I wanted to create a space for women, LGBTQIA community, and other minority groups to come in and play Dungeons & Dragons and other CTRPGs and just have, like, a safe place to game and to kind of promote diversity in gaming. Because I know if other people are like, hey, you know, I see someone in a part of community that I can relate with, you know, I feel included, I'm excited to try this. I also do interviews over there. So it's just kind of a, like, a small, casual place to kind of hang out. So...
And are those only streamed live, or can people go out to the Red Knights Inn and see some of your older sessions there?
So I think when I start interviews, I'm going to try to get everything uploaded onto YouTube. So there's kind of two sides to the Red Knight Inn. There's kind of like the outside where I stream live, and I'll start having videos. And then there's kind of like the inside where I do like playtesting and other things inside of Discord. So that's more casual gaming that's not streamed.
So people can follow you on Twitch under the Red Knights Inn, or you already gave your Twitter handles and Facebook, and people can find details there when something's upcoming?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just on Twitter, look for at DNDElise, E-L-I-S-E, and you should easily be able to find my Twitter and Facebook and all the places online.
I saw an interview with you on Facebook where one thing jumped out at me, where they asked you the question, what D&D monster are you and why? And you chose Bahamut, the Platinum Dragon. I thought that was an interesting choice.
She's a strong, powerful female dragon. So, like, I don't know, I think she embodies, like, female empowerment. So that's why I chose her. And he doesn't want to be a dragon. So.
Well, must be why all the other characters are so terrified of her and want to keep her contained.
Well, what about Tiamat, the chromatic dragon?
Oh, she's evil, though. I wanted to be the good aligned one.
Oh, well, so, okay. If we're going to be morality essentialist here or whatever.
And am I forgetting? I don't remember a really powerful neutral dragon.
That's a good point.
And there's definitely a dragon absence.
Yeah, I need to work on that.
Well, Tiamat more symbolizes the LGBTQIA community because she's the rainbow dragon.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all evil, so there you go. No, I just thought that was an interesting selection there. My favorite monster has always been the gelatinous cube, but I certainly don't see myself as a gelatinous cube.
You don't see yourself as an upgraded dodecahedron or anything, being gelatinous?
No, I'm not that gelatinous. But I think I was actually wondering, is some advice you would give a young lady, or older lady, I guess, but oftentimes it is the younger ones, who has always wanted to get into gaming but doesn't really know what to do and is kind of worried about it because it has the perception of being, you know, a very male-centric activity. You know, do you have some advice you would give young women to get involved?
Absolutely. One way you can get involved is look for local gaming groups on Facebook. Just search your city and gaming and just be like, hey, you know, I'm looking for an all-women's table, or I'm just looking for a game. Do you know of any good stores that kind of are open to diversity in gaming? Talk to your local gaming stores. I know Pulp Fiction Comics and Games in Lisbon, Missouri is a great place to go. I know when I used to live down there, Ad Dawson, their whole team, like, all of us, there wasn't a ton of women that were there, but we all felt really comfortable being there. And they're just a very family-oriented, welcoming place. Also, if you're not afraid to just go into a gaming store and DM a game and be like, hey, I'm putting a post on the board, I'm GMing this game, just being there at the table as a woman will help promote diversity in gaming. Because I used to GM in a big gaming store that was all men. I think one other woman was at a different table. And I think my favorite thing that ever happened there was this dad came in with his daughter, and he sees me, or she sees me, and they're like, he's explaining, like, hey, that's the GM. You know, this is what she does, et cetera. You could be like her one day. You could be a GM. And I'm all like, that's so amazing. You know, I'm helped just being here. It's helping, you know, women feel like this is something you can do one day. And parents just see their kids doing that. If you're really ambitious, start events locally. If you want to do Women in Gaming Month in June or Pride Month or just a Women in Gaming event or whatever you want to do, go to your local comic book store or gaming store and be like, hey, you know, I'm really interested in doing a small event at the store. Can we help organize something? You could do it in a public space if you want. But I highly recommend just getting out there and starting an event, putting out flyers, because you'd be surprised how many people show up and are interested in something like that. So I just highly recommend getting out there and fighting the good fight toward women in gaming. So,
jumping on that, I can say that on Facebook there is a Role Players Guild of Kansas City, and people frequently post in there saying, I'm looking for an extra person for a game of 5th edition or Shadowrun or whatever. And so people that are interested could search on there and join that Facebook group, and that would be an option. They frequently do like one gaming day a month, and they have different games, and people can try one-shots and meet up with groups and find like minds that way.
Yeah, they're also really good at keeping up with the con schedule. So if there's gaming conventions coming up, they're really good at tracking that. I used to be a member of the guild when I lived in the area, so I agree. I absolutely recommend the RPG Guild in Kansas City.
So one thing that I thought of, because earlier you referred to the LGBT community, I think some of the advice that you offered for encouraging women in gaming, excuse me, would often apply the same for making LGBTQIA persons feel at home. I know at there's a fine establishment called the Center for Inclusion, two doors down from us, where they were hosting D&D games that they called gender non-binary D&D. Basically, very subtle change where there was no gender for any characters, monsters, or anything in the game. It was just everyone was just who they were, but they just took that part out of it because there are a lot of gender non-conforming, gender non-binary, gender fluid youth that were coming to the center. I thought that was kind of inventive.
I think that's really cool. Yeah.
And we had a coat that we found recently, and it was +1 to your charisma, but +2 if the person you were speaking to was of the opposite gender, which completely ignored the fact that the person might be the same gender and still attracted to you, or might not be a binary gender.
Really?
Yeah, really. So that could be something that could be easily altered and amended to make LGBTQIA people feel more comfortable.
Yeah, that is really exclusionary, but okay.
But people wouldn't normally think like that unless they were part of the community or unless it actually stepped on their toes to which automatically made them aware of it.
Yeah.
Players are always conniving for things. I remember a game I DM'd where one player was saying, well, this other player is my brother, and every time that he gets hit in battle, I'm enraged, so I get +2 to attack or whatever. And I'm like, okay, but every time they get damaged, you're so demoralized, you get -2 on your next attack. And like, you're not going to win this one with me, honey. You know, just don't try.
Yeah, if you're going to have the character-driven benefits, you have to have the character-driven deficits as well.
Oh, they never think of it that way.
I know I was at a game and a new player was joining us and was sitting in and was playing, and they made a transphobic joke during the game. And since they were a friend of a friend, I didn't want to completely jump down their throat and destroy them, but I did point out that that wasn't acceptable, and then we had a conversation about that, which actually resolved with them saying that they could see the point and they wouldn't do it again, which
really?
Was amazingly mature and responsible and completely unlike how things go on Twitter or anything. But they also didn't come back to play a second game.
So, oh, dear.
Yes, I wasn't totally devastated by that, but
so they made a transphobic joke, knowing that you're married to a transgender woman.
They didn't.
Charming.
They did not know that.
I see.
And I'm pretty sure my friends don't go around outing you by indirection, by outing me as being married to a trans woman.
Well, they wouldn't, because I'm fabulous. But
you are fabulous. And people just can't see that over the radio, unfortunately. So if you were going to design anything specifically to be inclusive to LGBTQIA people, do you have any guidelines to any DMs that might be listening?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing to do is look at your table. Is your table all white guys? If so, change that. Like, reach out to, you have any LGBTQIA friends, put up a post being like, hey, you know, I'm really trying to promote diversity in gaming at my table. Invite people over. Also think about your game content. Like, as you're going through the books or you're homebrewing, who are your NPCs? Is it all guys? Or are there women? Are there folks who are non-binary or transgender? Have the shopkeep be transgender. You know, have the mayor of the town be from the LGBTQIA community. Create that diversity in your world. Because I think having that is going to help people feel more comfortable at the gaming table. So I think that's definitely a start. To kind of building that diversity. And you said just at the gaming table or elsewhere as well?
Well, elsewhere as well, but I was just thinking initially of making your players feel comfortable.
Yeah. So, yeah, and just using those safety tools. Like, my biggest thing, safety tools. Just look up, like, D&D safety tools. Kiana has a great set that are 100% free online that you can use. Just kind of get acclimated with those and tell your players about them. I think that's a really great way to, like, bring safety to your table. That way people feel okay with, like, okay, someone just made, like, a transphobic joke, for example. Now I feel comfortable enough to use my safety tools to like, be like, okay, this is not cool. X card, you know, stuff like that. So I think those help out a lot, too.
And I think there's probably lots of resources online for people to work those characters into their games in a smooth way instead of making them be a stereotype and making people perhaps feel worse.
Yes, and there's also creators out there, like Simpson Caged. We've been working hard to create more diverse content as well. So I know Cage has some of that content, but also we have a diverse NPCs project coming out, spearheaded by David Mikowski, which will have folks from LGBTQIA community, different races, different genders, etc. And I know Lynn Meyer and one of her friends is also creating an LGBTQIA NPC project. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to announce what it's called yet, but just look her up on Twitter and you can start following that as well as it goes into production.
Those sound like some great resources.
Yeah, it's all DMs filled.
So we don't have much time left before I have to bring the next guest on. Is this like one burning thought in your head or one big piece of advice you'd really like to share with people, whether it's about how to get into gaming or how to get into creating content? What would you like to share?
Just don't be afraid to try. If you really want to try something, just, you know, put your fear aside, bring a friend if you have to, and just go do it. Like, reach out to the community, reach out whether locally or online. Don't be afraid to GM in a story if you're the only woman or the only trans person there. Just get out there and do it and start building a community, inviting other people from the community into the store. Because I think just being there is enough to be like, oh, look, there's other folks who are LGBTQIA or women or African-American or et cetera. Like, I feel like I can be here too. So I think just kind of getting past that fear of trying something new is the best advice I can give you. Is just try it. Just do it. So,
thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, thank you. We really enjoyed speaking with
absolutely.
You and having a little... jokes too about gaming. Everyone likes gaming jokes.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you so much for having me. I really love the kind of show that you put together, because I think diversity, like in gaming and every other aspect of life, is extremely important to me. So thank you so much for doing what you do.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye. Right, and now we'd like to welcome Dr. Carmen Shea. who is the VP of Diversity and Inclusion for the National Women's Political Caucus, and we're going to talk to her about the upcoming convention in St. Louis. Dr. Shea, welcome to Every Woman.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm really, really proud to be on the radio show.
So could you tell me a little bit about yourself and your role as VP of Diversity and Inclusion, and then we can talk about the convention?
All right. Well, first of all, a little history about the National Women's Political Caucus. The National Women's Political Caucus is an organization that was founded in 1971 by Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug, and Shirley Chisholm. And it's an organization that is designed to help women, in other words, to recruit them, to train them, and to endorse them. It is the oldest organization that has done this and has done all three features of really getting women elected to office. So we're very, very proud of our history. I, as the Vice President of Diversity, my role is to make sure that diversity and inclusion are part of the National Women's Political Caucus in every way, and that is looking at bringing more women of color, LGBTQ, and all the other, the spectrum of diversity that is the United States, for women to be part of the process of being elected to office and being elected.
Thank you. I know a lot of people say that there should be more women involved in politics, but then very few people do things to actually support them getting into politics and getting that interaction and that presence.
Right. You know, as you know, women face intersectionality at all levels, and certainly we see that at every single layer of the intersectionality spectrum weighs against them in regards to their potential for getting elected for office, because there's so much that they have to overcome. The game is of politics was originally designed for white, for Caucasian men to be in power, and therefore anyone, women and people of color and people LGBTQ, were not part of the original formula. So therefore, it is always a struggle, and women have more barriers in order for them to get through to be elected to office.
And you also used to have to be a landowner and have a certain amount of assets before you could even run.
Absolutely.
So designed
Absolutely.
To keep poor people out so they couldn't change government to actually benefit the majority.
Absolutely, absolutely. In other words, it was white male landowners that were to keep the power.
Yes.
So, yes.
Earlier, we had a episode of Wings. It was a repeat, or I guess we can't say repeat. We'll call them golden oldies from 1991, where they had speakers noting that there were four women of color in the entire U.S. Congress at that time, and now we have, I believe, 74 women of color, 70 Democrats and 4 Republicans in the Congress. So we've made some progress for diversity on that front, but overall we're still lagging a bit behind.
Well, this is true. We just to expand a little bit on that breakdown, we have 22 black women in Congress, we have 12 Latinos, we have 6 Asian Pacific Islanders, 2 Native Americans, and this is the first time this year that 2 Native American women were elected to Congress, and that is shameful because the Native American population is the original population of the United States. Of course, 1 Middle Eastern woman, and the previous high was 34, and now we have this terrific number.
Actually, it's 40. I misspoke. I said 74. It's 47. I
yes.
reversed the numbers.
Yes,
if only
okay.
if it
anyway,
were 74, so that would be wishful thinking.
Yes, it would. And we are absolutely, you know, very happy that we've made such strides. But as you know, that keeping in power means that you must also keep the power. And so that means that we have to continue to recruit women so that we are able to keep these seats, because we don't want them to be a one-time or a two-time only candidate. And we need to, of course, create a legacy for other women to run behind these women who are in termed out seats in certain states.
So when you're trying to create legacies like that, how, I assume you're providing training at your caucus and also in the regional locations.
Yes. We do offer training, and the training includes how to get started, deciding to run, what is it that you're facing, looking at the numbers of who has been elected at this time, and how can you get your foot in the door in order and garner support, raising money, and of course there is a whole section on diversity and inclusion. So that is part of our training. And in other words, how to garner support from those communities.
And not just to garner their support, but presumably to make sure you actually represent them and include their input and include
Correct.
Their needs.
Correct. Absolutely. And so in order for you to not just garner the support, but to understand the community that you serve or that you're going to serve and that you are going to be providing their needs and looking at their needs inclusively.
And so I know that you have a diversity panel coming up at the convention. First,
yes.
In case anyone doesn't know when the convention is, in case they're interested in attending themselves, what dates and times is it, and how would people go about getting there?
Well, first of all, one of our mantras is show me you stand with women, because Missouri has certainly had some step backs with regards to the recent legislation with the Planned Parenthood and abortion rights. And so our national convention will be in St. Louis on July the 8th. It starts the 19th through the 21st, but our campaign training will be July the 18th. There will also be a smart money workshop on teaching women how to manage their money and negotiate in the workforce. And that is available too. And there's a no charge for the Smart Money Workshop. You can sign up for the convention on the website, which is National Women's Political Caucus.org, and it'll take you right to the registration site.
That's great. We'll come right back to discussing more about the convention, but we have to take a brief station break now, so thank you, and please stay on the line.
Yeah, please stay.
Thank you.
Support for KKFI provided by Harrah's North Kansas City, presenting Al DiMeola's Past, Present, and Future. Music of DiMeola, Piazzolla, and the Beatles' U.S. Fall Tour in the Voodoo Lounge on Friday, September 6, 2019. Tickets for Al DiMeola are on sale now through Ticketmaster.com. That's Al DiMeola at the Voodoo Lounge at Harrah's North Kansas City on September 6th. Must be 21 or over to gamble. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
The Midcoast Radio Project is accepting applications for a chief operator / traffic coordinator for 90.1 KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. For a list of responsibilities, necessary qualifications, and the application process, please see kkfi.org/about/employment. We are looking to fill this position immediately with a start date in July.
And welcome back to Every Woman here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And we are speaking with our special guest, Dr. Carmen Shea, who is telling us about the National Women's Political Caucus event in St. Louis. And I have a question. The section that I'm speaking on, you know, what is the focus or the driver behind that, that part of the conference?
Since many of the attendees to the diversity panel workshop will be, diversity luncheon will be potential candidates or people that are women that are interested in running, we want to focus on the different communities and to sensitize them to the different communities that they may have to serve, that they will serve. And so with that, what we're trying to do is we're trying to introduce them to leaders and advocates in the community and how to support them, how to help them, how to look at their needs, and how you, as a candidate, will be able to support that community's needs if elected.
And I think we have seen some moderate success, I guess, this last election cycle with increasing the LGBTQIA representation, not just at the national level, but at many state and local levels. It's some people say that it may just be a short-lived thing, a temporary backlash against the conservative wave, so to speak, of 2016. But I think many other people would like it to be a very lasting and growing part of the movement. So it seems to me that anything that increases the awareness of diversity, whether that be based on sexual preference or gender identification, on race, on ethnicity, has to be a very, really very powerful thing to help the movement, so to speak.
Correct. And what we're also trying to do is we're trying to have women also know how to raise money. And basically, you can only raise money if you are sensitive to a community's needs. And so, therefore, we want to make sure that our candidates know how to raise money. So this is part of our diversity panel, as we have different representatives from different communities. Some are elected officials or were elected officials. And actually, we even have one woman who is the founder of Women's March. So looking at activism, because activism is a very important part of keeping the momentum going with regards to keeping women elected in office.
So you would say this is important for people to attend, not just if they're intending to run for office themselves, but if they want to be involved at all and help and support candidates locally.
That's correct. And understanding the different focuses that makes our wonderful American collage.
And I understand this convention only happens every other year?
Yes.
So with it being so close to Kansas City, it's a really great and timely opportunity for anyone interested in getting more involved in, not just in politics, but in shaping politics as things move forwards.
Yes. Absolutely, and certainly with what has happened in Missouri, we are definitely making an impact with Missouri. We are having a press conference on July the 19th with regards to address that, and I think that that's very important.
How many attendees do you expect to have at your event?
We usually get somewhere between 150 to 200.
And anyone that's interested in going can find more information at www.nwpc.org if they want to increase those numbers.
Absolutely. And they can register online. We'd love to see them. We would love to. There's also individual tickets for an event or a day so that you are able to participate within the constraints of your schedule. So we look forward to everyone coming that is interested in politics. And if you're not, get interested in politics. It is our life.
Right. If you're not interested in politics, you're doing life wrong.
That's right. Because everything is about politics. Everything.
I understand, too, there are some networking opportunities for women, including or especially for women who may be considering a political career at some point in the future, even if it's something as even if it's something down at the level of being on the board of your homeowners association or a local, local city office or something. There's a lot of skills, I think, that can be learned in terms of how to really understand the process and how to understand how the system is set up and how you can work best with it and then eventually work to change it.
You're absolutely correct. And I always look at even the most, what people consider insignificant level, but it is probably one of the most significant levels. If you're wanting to run to be the president of your PTA, I think you ought to learn how the system works and how to, you know, what the importance of your board and what your role is within the school board. So even at that level, it is the skills learned through the campaign training. You also have the opportunity to have our national campaign trainer, who is Kathy Allen. She is an incredible trainer who has, she's actually an international trainer. And she's trained women all over the country and also trained women in the Middle East, in Mexico City, in South America. So she really, really, we're very, very privileged to have her. And whoever signs up for this training really has an opportunity to work with women, a woman who really, really has many years of campaign training expertise. And nationally and internationally.
So we're coming up on the end of our interview, so if there's one last thing that you would like to emphasize to people, either about the convention or about your time, please go ahead.
When women run, women win, and as we can see, our 2018-2019 election showed that. And show me you stand with women. So come to the convention so that you can show other women and others that you stand with women.
Thank you so much, Dr. Shea, for being with us today.
Thank you very much. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that was the end of our show today. Please stay tuned for Donna Wolf with Urban Connections and then MC Richardson with Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City. We'll have another great show for you next week. And thank you, Una, for engineering.
And thank you, Fiona, for...
Not engineering. And we'll be back again with you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to everyone at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.